Hello and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-host, starting with W's, the wonderfully welcoming and well-spoken Mary Abajay.
Hi, Chris DeSantis. Hi, everybody. Mary Abajay here, and I would like to introduce my co-host to you, the wonderful, the wise, and not at all wizened, Mr. Chris DeSantis.
Oh, that's great. Right. Now I feel like Gandalf.
Right. Well, I'm not wizened as kind of like old and icky because, you know, you just got back from that high school reunion. And so I wanted
vibrant. Oh, my God. Right.
You had to see some wizened people at that reunion.
I did. I realized that upon my return, I'm old. You know what I'm saying? Like, because we age in a mirror and we don't notice. But then when you all of a sudden see somebody you hadn't seen in 50 years, you say, whoa.
I have that feeling every morning when I look into the mirror and I'm like, who the hell is that old lady looking back at me? I don't know. Right before we got to taping, I was combing my hair because it was just been a ponytail all day. And I saw a gray hair.
Oh, this is your first gray hair?
No, but I don't have very many, but it was like right in front. I did find a gray eyebrow a couple of weeks ago, and I plucked that sucker out so fast. I mean, it's just like, who needs one stray gray eyebrow hair?
Nobody needs that.
No one
so
needs
So what
that.
Do you do as? What do you do when you have a few? Do you do a wash, a color? Or do you just
so I have, generally speaking, I do highlight my hair a couple times a year, like twice a year. I have really mousy brown hair by nature, so I put some like blondish highlights in it. And you know, a couple of years ago, I went totally brunette. Went to my natural hair color, which is kind of like a mousy dark brown. And literally everybody who knows me had sat me down after like a year of it and said, Mary, no. they're like, it just doesn't work for you. You're all natural doesn't work for you. And so I started highlighting again.
Although your hair never looks highlighted. I thought that was it.
I spent a lot of money on it. So
it looks good. It looks good.
Thank you.
I was thinking of dyeing mine, but I don't know. I don't
all five strands of them. Like,
yeah, I didn't want to take my shirt off to do that.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, funny. So, Chris, what are we talking about today besides hair?
The questions that I gathered here were sell, sell, sell. So anything related to selling, I thought these were kind of fun to put together. And there's a variety of them. By the way, did you... I started in selling. I think that was my first professional job. I sold phones.
Yeah.
What did you sell ever? I mean, any jobs?
I mean, sort of. I was always in food. My high school jobs were always in food service. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of selling, but you're selling to people who are already there, so they already want something, right?
Because you're upselling.
Yeah, they're already there.
You want fries with that?
You want fries with that? Exactly. Or, you know, you're just trying to make them feel good about their sale. And then, of course... and then in my professional career, I did have a stint in marketing for a while in public relations. So you're kind of selling.
Image selling.
Yeah. And then, with the bar, again, you're selling things that people already want because they walked in. So I don't think I really had to really think about selling until I opened up my consulting firm. And then selling became, well, a huge part of anyone who owns professional services. Whether you, I know you don't call it selling, but you know, you've got to sell. No. You don't have any business unless you're selling yourself. So I've come to learn and appreciate and understand selling in the last 15 years.
Although I will say that your training prepared you for this because the jobs that you had a high listening quotient attached to them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think the best salespeople are the best listeners.
Yeah. Well, except that when you own a bar, you ain't really listening. You're like, you're listening long enough to find out whether they want salt on that margarita or no salt. But I think that so many of us have, when we think of selling, we think, you know, used car salesmen. I think salesmen have a bad rap out in the world. And so I think when you have to start selling, I think oftentimes people, we can't get out of our own way because we can't get out of that image of what we think it's supposed to be instead of understanding what it really is.
Yes. I think that's right.
And it's the same for, for fundraising, right? So I have some good friends who are very good at development, right? Development in terms of like raising money for nonprofit organizations. And I I've had to do it a few times for different boards I'm a part of. And I always get very nervous by asking people for money until my development friends point out to me, it's not about, you're not selling them anything. You're building a relationship. And it's about like understanding what they value and seeing if by them giving you money, you can help them find some value or something like that. So it was really interesting.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you were talking about this, the used car salesman, what came to my mind was because I was reading another book about the availability heuristics. Availability heuristics are what I have available is what I make the decision about, meaning that if when I see selling, I see it from the context often of what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
So my availability heuristic is, well, that's what my selling must be. But to your point about when you meet somebody, when you don't notice that they're selling you, then in fact, they might actually be trying to accomplish something along those lines. We don't see it. The really good ones, we don't see.
Yeah, good point.
We don't see it. So that's so interesting. We only see the really crass version and we think that's what it is and it's not.
Good point. Yeah, used car salesman, right? That's what we see.
Exactly,
How do you say heuristics?
Heuristics.
You use that word a lot and I really like it, but I never use it myself because I'm never sure, like, because whenever I talk, I see the words kind of in my mind and I'm never sure I'm going to actually say it correctly.
It's so funny. There's some words that I wish I could come up with right now.
Hegemony. Hegemony. I love that word. Hegemony.
Yeah, right.
But I'm not sure how to say it ever.
Right.
I had to practice amygdala a thousand times.
You used that. I remember seeing that you used that the other day.
I thought,
she used amygdala.
And I have to constantly say it out loud or I forget.
Hippocampus or hippocampus.
Hippocampus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I don't know.
I keep thinking hippopotamus. My hippopotamus. That's another part of my brain. That's a big, heavy, fatty one.
Speaking of fatty brains, let's get rolling my fatty brain's not going to
I know. Okay. So here we go. Ready for question number 1?
I am ready, Freddy, ready.
Dear Cubicle Confidential, I just started my first job at a popular beauty products chain. I'm a salesperson, and the job is minimum wage plus commission. I have never sold stuff before. I asked two other salespeople who are pretty good at it, but they both looked at me funny, like I asked a stupid question. I think it's because they view me as competition, and any sale I make is a sale they don't. My question is, since I don't know anything about selling, do you have any advice for beginners? Signed, Beauty's Only Skin Deep in Sacramento.
Oh, this is the perfect question based on what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, I'm going to call you Skin Deep Beauty. What was it?
Beauty's Only Skin Deep in Sacramento.
All right. I'm calling you Skin Deep Beauty. So listen, I'm just going to call you Skin Deep. So Skin Deep. So first of all, feel your pain, empathize. Selling for the first time, as Chris and I were just talking about, can be really daunting. It can be a little scary, a little nerve-wracking, you know, because as we were saying, it has often has a bad reputation, like used car salesmen. The heuristics, how do you say it? Heuristics of it can really get in our way. So I have three things I'm going to tell you to do, or three sort of like buckets of ways to think about this. The first one, Chris had said earlier, it's really all about listening. That is step number one. Learn to be a great listener. You'll know how you can help them if you can listen to what they're trying to accomplish, what they're trying to do, your work in abuse supply, like what are their challenges? What are their goals? Like really listen, make them feel heard, but also make sure you hear what they want. My second piece of advice is to build rapport, even quick rapport, but people will buy things from people they like. People buy things from people they trust. People will buy things from people they think are on their side. So take the time, listen to them, build some rapport, really seek to help them, and then move into offering solutions. So think of yourself as like a partner with that person. Your goal is not to sell them anything. Your goal is to help them solve their problems or achieve their beauty goals or make their lives better in some way. So listen, build rapport, and then offer solutions to help them create the life they are trying to create or whatever it is they're in there for your help. And that's my quick advice for how to be a better salesperson.
I love it. I think your advice is great. I think listening to them, building rapport, and then solve their problem, I think that really capsulizes it. I would add to this in the sense that I'm building on what Mary is saying is what we want to get in the habit of is pay attention to the total person in front of you.
Yeah.
And what I would say, start to learn to profile. I don't mean profile in a negative sense, but look, that's a buyer. And so what are they gravitating towards, this particular buyer? Because once you start to learn what these particular buyers and how they look in terms of who they are, you start to get some insights. You start to get insights. So the more you learn about the people you're observing, the more you can use that going forward. The next thing I would do before you do anything in terms of listening to their issues is first, and I, because I'm a buyer myself, is always say ask if you can help.
Yeah.
Don't assume that you can help. Don't give them things that they may or may not want or suggest things that they may or not, because you know what that's called? That's shotgunning. You're making your best guess and people hate that. What you want to say is there anything I can help you with? If they refrain and say, no, I'm fine, leave them alone. Now, to Mary's point, once you get them sort of, if they say, yes, I'm having a problem with this, that's when you say, well, what exactly are you dealing with here? What are you interested in? And then ask them, not tell them, don't make a recommendation yet. When you want to say is, you want to go, okay, this is the problem. What are you trying to see? What are the implications of not solving the problem? Meaning, okay, maybe the implication is, you won't look as good as you want or whatever the things are. But the point of this is you want to start asking questions about what they're looking for relative to solving the problem. This is all a questions game. It's all a questions game. And then before you even give them the solution, say, okay, based on what you've told me about the problem, so you'd like something that has a nice finish on the skin, has a nice pleasant scent. If it has a nice finish on the skin, has a nice pleasant scent to it, is reasonably priced. Is that the kind of thing you want? Then if they say, yeah, boom, then you go in for the kill.
Yeah.
Because then you have know what they want. So the point of this, before you assume what they want, find out what the problem is, and then ask some questions about digging deeper. Think of it as an onion. Peel the onion of their concern. Then finally, when you get to something that says, okay, if I do these things, would that solve your problem? And then you give them what they want.
I love it. And you know, the only thing I would quibble in is we just said it's not being a used car salesman. So you're not going in for the kill. You're going in plane landing. Yeah, no, I'm just teasing
true.
You.
I was just getting so excited about getting that point.
But you know, you brought up a nice point is like, in order to be able to offer them solutions, you need to know what you're selling, right?
Yes,
so you really need, especially if you're in this beauty store, really get familiar with the products.
Yes.
And you know, you can use your different sales interactions to learn about the products. You know, so what products are you using now, and what do you like about them? What do you not like about them? So you can really use this also to help you get more information. Would you recommend? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, good. I was going to add one more thing because you turn these other salespeople's as opposed to competitors into cooperators, and what you would do is since you don't know as much as you should know yet, when you are posed with a question you can't answer, bring them over to one of the more experienced people and say, oh my God, I'm sorry to bother you, but I know you have a lot more knowledge in this area. I thought if I brought this person has this issue, could you help them in this category? My point would be then listen.
Yeah.
You're going to watch them. They may close the deal on this, but you'll learn what they did to do that. So going forward, you have a shot at doing it. And secondly, you're putting them on your side.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely right. I mean, never be afraid to say, you know, I don't know, let me bring in someone who's really expert in that.
Exactly.
And then introduce that person by name, make it feel a little bit more personal and make that happen. And I will say to people who are going into stores like this, you know, my initial inclination, when I was younger, when I went to any kind of a store, I mean, sometimes you're just browsing, but if I'm going to a store looking for something, I would always say, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah. I don't need any help. And I would go look around because I want to do it myself. But I have learned like in the last 10 years, if I'm looking for something or if I'm like, even if I'm exploring options for something and the clerk asks if they can help me, I say, yes, I can. Here's my list. I am. I'm looking for this, you know, whether it's a bottle of wine for a certain thing or like I am now actively really trying to appreciate the expertise that, store salespeople have.
I love that. You know, it's so interesting because I used to be that when I'm when I have less confidence in something, I deflect, meaning like, oh no, I can look for this myself.
Me too.
Right? But when I have more confidence in something, I ask for the help.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
It is interesting. You know, part of me is like, I don't want to feel bad if they do a lot of work to help me and then I don't buy anything or I'm embarrassed because I don't know what it is. Yeah. But I have to say, whenever I'm very vulnerable with a salesperson, I'm usually they usually help me find the greatest stuff. So,
yeah.
Before we go off this question, do you think we should recommend that they read Dan Pink's book, To Sell as Human? I think that's
a nice starter book. Yeah, Dan Pink's a great author, a very good book. Yeah, To Sell as Human. So my guess is you're probably doing a lot of these behaviors in any given day. You're just saying being more organized around them.
And reframing. I think a lot of people just need to reframe what it means to sell.
Right. They're in there because they want to have a problem, as Mary said, they want to have their problem solved.
Yeah.
Find a way to help them solve that problem.
Love it. Love it. All right, Skin Excellent. Deep Beauty. Good luck.
Good luck.
Feel free to send me free samples.
Okay, you ready for question number 2?
I am ready.
Hi, Mary and Chris. I manage a group of 5 lawn care salespeople. The summer season is upon us, and so it's a great opportunity to sell and upsell customers. One of my salespeople, Barb, is a star. She is by far my best performer. She can sell anything. I've got 2 that are decent. One knows lawn care, and the other knows lawn equipment. I have one that's new and one that's really amazing with the technical aspects of lawn care, but can't seem to close a sale. He just gives them very detailed answers to anything they might ask. How do I turn them into a sales team of 5 Barbaras, or is that even possible? Signed, Growing a Team in Milwaukee.
And this question. Lawn, as in LAWN.
Yes, lawn care. Yeah,
like lawns, like the lawns that I would have if I actually had a house that was big enough for a lawn here in D.C.
Oh, yeah, this is Milwaukee, so there's probably lots of big yards.
Lots of lawns. So you know what? For me, this really comes down to how are you going to do some professional development and training with your sales teams? So I think there's a couple of ways you can do this. You could either train them, or maybe it's a combination. Like you could either train them individually based on wherever they are weaker, you know, so the person that goes into too much detail, you could say like, hey, here's the right amount of detail. The one that's good with lawn care, the other on the technical, like just help them learn the other aspects. So you could do some individual training. But I think what I might approach for this is to do some group training. Would probably see if Barbara couldn't like come up with her top 10 like lessons learned or top 10 skills or top 10 sensibilities that are successful for her. So making it really homegrown. I wouldn't bring in like a Sandler Training Institute or something. I would really tap into your internal expertise. I would also then have them do some role plays. Like I would have like Barbara maybe, or together as a team, you create some different client customer personas, you know, like the foot dragger, the person that's this or that, and like do some role plays. And you have to make sure you're giving feedback as people are exhibiting their selling wares. So for example, the guy that goes in too much detail, if you do a role play with him, you can help him see where he's failing, where he's not failing. You know, and something that you had mentioned in the other one, which I want to suggest for this one is maybe they work in teams for a while. So maybe for the next couple of weeks, you pair them up with their opposite so they can actually learn how to sell in the areas that they're not strong on. So those are a couple of areas, but I really think this is about training. It's about exposure. I think if you want them all to be like Barbara or all to be Barbara-like or all at least to be well-rounded, then I think making this kind of a group sales effort would be great. My last thought on this is, if you're going to have them work in teams or make it kind of a teamy team thing, then, you know, be sure that you are incentivizing them in a way to actually be cooperative in their sales, right? Because if we are going to only reward people for individual sales, then there's not going to be a lot of incentive to team up or to help other people learn to be better salespeople.
I think that's all really good advice. In fact, I like this idea. I'm going to key in on something entirely different.
Ooh,
because I liked what Mary said. This is what I would have said, with Mary, but I wanted to experiment here because I like Mary's point about this. Look, you got to leverage who you got there and how can they teach each other. And I like the idea that you pair them up and then you sort of work as a team with this and the rewards. I'm going to push the envelope even further. I say we do an experiment. Look, you want to change the behavior radically, change the reward system entirely. And so what I would say is let's create a team strategy for reward this year alone. When I say team strategy, look at last year's sales and say, what did we sell over the course of this season that was what we wanted to sell? And then where was the margins in terms of what we sold in terms of the big items? So now I want you to bring the whole team together and say, this is what we made last year. This is where it went. This is what I'd like to do this year. And this is the possibility of that. So what I'm saying is we've got each of you has something that you bring to the table. For instance, Barb, closer. She's the closer, right?
ABC.
Yeah. Then we got that tech guy, you know, the guy who can't make any closes, but knows all the technology. You know what he is? He's the seminar leader. He starts teaching the clients on this. And then you got the lawn person. So basic, pass off all lawn equipment to the lawn equip this person. So anything related to lawn equipment, basically you say, okay.
Let's call Bob over.
Exactly. And then as soon as Bob sells on the lawn equipment, he then passes it back to the lawn care guy and says, you know, you've got the equipment, but you know what you're missing? You're missing these things. And so they start to swap each other because they each upsell with each other. Now, the new person isn't going to be vital to the selling process yet, but you know what every salesperson hates? The admin. So what you start doing is you get this person to handle all of the other aspects of the sales process that is not attached to the close or the client relationships, but you get them to observe all of those things. So what you do is you create this admin role that they fill in. So now the whole thing is a well-oiled machine working together and no one's in competition with each other in the sense they're all bringing what is unique to who they are to the table, and the rewards should be then reflective of that. And my theory would be the collective reward will be much higher as a consequence than the input any one of them would have had.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think that's just a brilliant idea. And, you know, it's all about, I love that you picked up on the incentivization because I was like, yeah. I'm not sure how to do that. But yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, because, and by the way, what they're going to learn is everything Mary said, because I think what they'll say to each other is, you know, I don't know how to do this. Hey, Barb, can you help me with this? Now everyone is incentive to cooperate and use what Mary's talking about, because Mary is saying, well, team up till you do. Watch them when you do it. Let's role play that. Let's look at that. Because I think there's everyone brings something to the table, find out what it is, fully leverage it in service of a strategy that everyone is clear on.
I love it.
I love it.
I think that we have literally grown a team for growing a team.
I think we have. We've saved their business.
We really have. We've just made them a shit ton of money.
A shit ton of money. And you can use that as compost, people, which will make you more money on top of that.
Oh, my God. That's what I'm done and done with.
Done and done.
Done and done.
Growing that team in Milwaukee. Okay. All right. That was good. We're on a roll. One more time. Right. You ready for one more?
Let's roll that dice again.
Hi, all. I know from your past shows, both of you have some experience with making presentations. Yeah, we do. What? I'm working on a pitch for a potentially big client. We are a small consulting firm with only 6 employees, 2 of whom are admin. My fear is that because we are small as a team, I'm afraid they will think we aren't big enough to take on the project. It's a process re-engineering opportunity for a family-owned business. How do we make the most of my team to impress on them that we can do the job? Signed, Small But Mighty in Fairfield. You've done this. This is like you.
Oh,
this is your storyline.
This is me.
Mary lives this every day.
Every day, people. All right, Small But Mighty. The answer to your question is embedded in your signature. You are small but mighty.
Mic drop,
exactly. That is your differentiating factor. That is your advantage. As a small firm, you're going to be able to provide high quality service with experienced people with a personal touch. You are what we call a boutique firm. Everybody likes a boutique firm. They will have access to the top people in your firm, right? So they're going to get white glove treatment from the top tier of your firm. Plus, you are only limiting, you limit how many clients you take on a year. So therefore, you can really serve the clients you have. Oh. Larger firms are a burn and churn company, right? These large firms, they just take on as much work as they can get. It's all about getting the work. And then they hire and throw young consultants who, quite frankly, don't know jack about what they're doing on these projects. They, in a large firm, they're going to be one of many other projects, but at your firm, they're going to be one of the top most important projects. You're going to staff this project with the highly experienced processing reengineering professionals. And because you are small, they will not get lost in the mix. Now, listen up. One of the things that you can say is that you only take on a certain number of clients every year so that you can. I had a PR firm tell me this, and they charge literally twice as much as other firms, and I hired them, and they were amazing because they really did limit how much they took on. So there's that. Now, here's the thing. When you really, you are going to have to pitch like your bona fides, like you want to pitch your success stories, make it personal, like use names of people that you helped in the name of their firms. When you introduce, and I'll tell you all that why in a minute. And when you introduce your team, use names, make it friendly, make them feel like they already know you. Because here's the thing, you are pitching to a family-owned business, and in a family-owned business, business is personal. So you are really going to, they have a lot more at stake at being successful because it's not only the business, it's the family business. Their whole identity is tied up with this business. So business becomes personal. You need to make this personal. You need to make them feel well taken care of. They have a lot more at stake for being more successful than other places. So that's the thing. So when you are introducing your team, you will say, this is Chris DeSantis. Chris DeSantis is going to be here with you. Like Chris is here for XYZ. Courtney over here is going to take care of all your admin needs. She's going to make sure, blah, blah, blah. So you really want to make it feel like they're getting white glove, high touch treatment. And that's it.
Wow.
I went on and on. Sorry.
No, you didn't go on and on. I think you covered so many of the things. I said the same thing in my little thoughts on this in terms of imagine small is beautiful.
Yeah.
And then ask yourself why. Why are we beautiful? Why are we beautiful? I love that. I love the idea of bringing everyone to the table as part of your team. Now, you might even layer this. You might even layer this because I think Mary's advice is spot on with everything she said, meaning that the way you sort of go in there, this is a family run. You personalize it. You do all those things. You might not, in your pitch, you don't might not sell your services yet, but you sell the idea of your services.
Say more.
Well, what I'm saying here is that maybe you need to do some informational interviews saying, look, this is how we operate. We only take so many projects a year, just like Mary said. We have an in-depth version of this. We stay with you the whole time. But before you make that decision, you not only have to you have to decide if you like us as well.
So
what we will do is we will do a preliminary round of interviews in terms of what we find out. We will call the what we think as the preliminary direction in which to take. This is not a full-fledged version, but rather we can do it in a day. We talk to key stakeholders. We get a better sense of what you want to accomplish, how you want to accomplish. We can give you a far more realistic picture. But most importantly, you get to meet our team.
I love
that. You get to meet our team, and you have to decide, can I hang out with this crowd? Because you're going to see us every day. Can I hang out with this crowd for the next year? Because you got to work with people you like, because you got to trust us. And if you don't like us and you don't trust us, then in fact, we won't get what you need to do to have happen. So that's why we don't want you to even decide about taking us on as the vendor. We want you to decide it's taking us on as the opportunity to present as your vendor. So that's how I would play it.
I love that so much. I love that. I love that. And I think that's fantastic. It's such a refreshing actually, quite frankly, it's also an honest approach. It's refreshing and honest, because for process reengineering to work, you do have to like the people you're working with, because you have to build trust. Yeah.
Well, the other thing too is we have to be realistic in terms of what they're actually the scope of a client's request doesn't align with the capability necessarily of what the client can accomplish.
Yeah.
So this preliminary set of interviews is to really define scope as they see the possibility of the execution in a realistic manner. See, the larger firms will always say, "Oh yeah, we can do this." You know why? Because they'll just throw more bodies on it, and then they'll charge you more for it.
That's exactly. And you know, you've got to find a nice way to say that.
But that is what larger firms do.
And so often, you know, with the larger firms, they'll come in, they'll do the work, they'll give you a report, and that report sits in a binder on the top shelf somewhere, and nothing ever happens from it.
Exactly right. And part of your message should be, we live the change.
Yeah.
And by the way, one other thing, one correction in your letter to us, which I want you to, it's just so small potatoes, but Mary and I had a discussion on a previous show about this. You had said at the very end, how do I make the most of my team? Again, you don't own your team, it's our team. And so always keep the language inclusive, because again, they are peers of the realm.
So, Chris, I have not been able to start. I mean, I say my team all the time. And I know we've talked about that, but I'm not sure I agreed. I'm not sure that I personally agreed to stop using my team. But I am more aware of it every time it comes out of my mouth. I'm like, gosh, darn it. Yeah, so, yeah. Oh, well, you know what? Small but mighty, we are rooting for you, because Chris and I, we both have small but mighty teams too. And I think it's almost always worked to my advantage.
Yes. I think if you have this as the philosophy of how you operate, you will always find clients.
Yeah.
You will always find clients.
I agree. I love it. Chris, look at that. Our small and mighty time together has now come to an end, and we have wasted another 30 some minutes of our good people's time.
But we've changed three lives.
We've changed three lives. You're right. And I feel good about myself now. I think I've sold myself on being a better person. So speaking of being better, it is time for us to better get off this show. So big, that didn't work. A big thank you to our amazing overworked, underpaid executive producer, Mr. Jack Ettinger. If you have a workplace question or cubicle dilemma, give us a shout. No question is too easy. No question is too hard. And there's lots of ways to reach us. You could email us to info@cubicleconfidential.com, tweet us @cubicleconfide1, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Chris DeSantis, Mary Abajay, people, we're everywhere. So until next week, we want you to work hard, be kind, sell us something, and if you can't,
call us.
All right, see you next week.